morning, everybody. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams. And as always, it is an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here speaking with you today. I love this studio. I love being in this chair, and I absolutely love this job. And today, we want to talk about something that is always a big topic to talk about, an important topic to talk about, recovery, and particularly recovery from alcoholism. We just made it through September, National Recovery Month. Is that right? You know, we want to recognize and honor that. But now we also have to acknowledge the fact that we are in October, the lovely spooky season in the whether you love it or hate it, the winter days are upon us. And that's going to kind of change the paradigm, if you will, of how we live and how we behave and the plans that we need to make to stay sober and stay safe. And so I have two lovely guests here with me, Tiffany Hall, the executive director of Recover Alaska, and Dr. Vivian Gonzalez, a professor of the Department of Psychology at UAA. And what else are you?
Oh, I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, mm-hmm. and my specialty is addiction.
Wonderful. So Tiffany, the executive director, that's a big seat. That is a big chair for a lovely company. Can you share what that job means to you, and how did you become the executive director of Recover Alaska?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for asking. So my background, my education and experience background is in public administration and nonprofit management. I've done some fundraising, done some marketing. So in theory, I felt like at some point I would like to be an executive director. And back in 2015, I saw this job open up. And actually, I saw it open up, I think, before that. But I thought, no, I'm not ready for that job yet. I like need to do some more work first.
Yeah.
But I talked to someone who was working for Recover Alaska at the time, and she really encouraged me to apply. So Alicia Townsbain, thanks so much for that encouragement. But the reason that I was so interested in just getting closer to Recover Alaska is because I'm also a person in long-term recovery from co-occurring substance use and mental health disorders. So it just felt like it was like kind of what my whole life had been leading to that point. Yeah. So super, super grateful to be able to give back to that way. I kind of feel like I owe my life to recovery. So it feels right to be doing that.
That's so rad. Yeah. It's funny how life sets us on those sorts of paths. You know, when we're in a particular place in our life, we try to look ahead to see where we're at the end of the tunnel, and we just can't see it. And then when we get there, we're just absolutely like amazed, but at the same time, like, oh, of course we would be here, right?
Right.
Like, life just does that. It's really funny.
Right. When I was in graduate school, I remember so many people were like, knew what their passion was and then just had to figure out how to get there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. What if you don't have a passion?
Right.
I was like, I could care about anything, you know, for a paycheck. I could get behind all these different causes. I
Absolutely.
Believe in a lot of different things. But then when this one kind of came up, it suddenly made sense.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And we're happy to have you here. And for those who don't know, what is Recover Alaska?
Great question. Recover Alaska is an organization working to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms across the state. We are not a provider of direct services. We try to stay at the system level. And so we do that work through four primary areas. We lead a statewide alcohol misuse prevention alliance for health and wellness. We work on social norms change, trying to celebrate and honor recovery and to reduce stigma for folks who need help. We try to increase access to care. So we try to get more information out there and connect people to resources. And then we also advocate for safer, healthier, and more equitable policies. So we do a lot of policy change work at the local, state, and federal level.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good, because I feel like a lot of people listening definitely need to have Recover Alaska like on their radar, you know, on their map.
Yes.
I didn't know about Recover Alaska until, honestly, probably until like 2019. My best friend is 10 years sober.
Oh, great.
And I talk with him at least once a month. He doesn't live in Alaska anymore, but whenever I see him post on Instagram, he's just so much healthier and so much happier with his life. And I attribute that almost 100% to, you know, his recovery and his mentorship that he had through that process. And so to know that there is an organization out there like Recover Alaska, dedicated to that mission, that makes me really happy. And it makes me feel, I don't know, that this day can be a lot safer in that realm. So thank you for being here and thank you for that, because that is a big job. It really is.
Thanks so much for saying so, Justin.
Oh, of course. And Dr. Vivian, so you are a licensed psychologist and a professor at UAA. So what is your life experience? What is your life path like that kind of led you here?
So you're right that it is kind of unique because a lot of mental health practitioners are not trained in treating addiction. They tend to send them out, send them someplace else. And that's a problem. We need to be treating this like any other disorder. And we need more people who are able to treat it and not have to send folks out for treatment. And there's not enough of that treatment out there. We need to be providing it ourselves. So what put me on this path, you know, when I went into grad school, I really wanted to treat mental health, mental illness issues. And in my training, just the amount of overlap between depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and substance use is tremendous. Mm. And you really can't effectively treat those disorders if you're not treating the addiction as well. Right. And from that, I got kind of more and more interested in addiction. I do research on the overlap between having mental health, other mental health problems and addiction, but just the importance of being able to treat addiction and getting more folks trained in that and having more access in the community.
You believe that we don't have enough people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There are not enough providers, and particularly in like rural areas, there you know, might not be anybody. That also kind of fuels an interest I have in technology-based interventions and alternative interventions to kind of traditional, you know, inpatient treatment, because there's just not enough of that.
Mm. You know, the more that I work in the healthcare field and the social services field, the more that I'm beginning to see that, you know. And I think part of it, too, is just not looking deep enough into where the actual bruises of the city are, and let alone how to heal them. And then, of course, we just have a lot of organizations where the turnover rates are so high that there aren't really in any consistency, holistic care plans or anything like that. And I feel like there's just a large population of the city that's being underserved because of that, because of those things like that. They seem pretty small on the outside, but being like in the middle where you are and where you are, Tiffany, I think you guys have a very better perspective on how to reach out to those people, either directly or indirectly. And can we define addiction for our audience?
You might have a different definition than me, so you go first.
I think probably. At Recover, we try to really talk about like the full spectrum of substance use disorders and alcohol use disorders. We focus on alcohol, but we work with a lot of other organizations who work on other substances because we know that they go together so often. But there is like physical dependence on alcohol. There is binge drinking. There is heavy drinking. All of these things have clinical definitions. Mm. And we really try to tell people that we want to interact with you maybe before you hit some of those definitions. Like there is a common misperception, I feel like, that a person, in order to need help with alcohol, they need to lose everything. They need to lose their job, their relationships, be incarcerated, whatever, lose their home, whatever that looks like. But it doesn't have to be that way. Right. And so we try to just talk about, you know, as soon as you're experiencing more negative impacts from alcohol than you are positive impacts, is a pretty good time to think about your drinking. We're not an abstinence-only organization, so we try to think about harms reduction too. And so a lot of times the motto is just drink less. Mm-hmm. You know, drink less, live better. Drink less, live more. Drink less, love more. So we try to be pretty open about that and to recognize that everyone has a different kind of quote-unquote bottom where they want to make a change. Mm-hmm.
Interacting with Recover Alaska is actually what opened my mind to the concept that it doesn't always have to mean cold turkey, drink less, drink less. That blew my mind. We tend to shame others when they're in recovery for a long amount of time, or when they slip or backstep, or when they hit that point of just drink less, or you're not really in recovery because you didn't stop drinking at all. Well, I do believe that every individual needs help to define that for themselves. Right. And to be able to support someone else whose goal is to stop drinking altogether. And so I think defining what addiction is for every individual person can help us see that and help us kind of support everyone in those regards. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Vivian?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, our perspectives very much align.
Yeah.
I do define substance use disorder according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. So there's 11 different criteria. And if you meet two or more of those, you have a disorder, but it's a continuum even amongst people who have the disorder. It goes from mild to severe. The majority of people actually have a mild disorder. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a minority who have a severe disorder. Even for folks who don't meet criteria for a disorder, though, you can drink enough that it has long-term negative health effects.
Absolutely.
So that idea of drink less, kind of reap the benefits of that is absolutely true, even for folks who don't meet criteria for a disorder.
Absolutely. I love that, and I love that. My mom is a psychology major, so the DSM is kind of everywhere.
Yes.
if not tangibly, then in the way that we talk to one another, and the it's just crazy. Yeah, we learned a lot about even for her and I what that means. We have a family history of addiction and recovery, thankfully, right? It's so nice to have one with the other, because when you're just in addiction, it's like, it seems like it never really ends.
I also I love that you just said that. I feel like no one ever says, we have a family history of recovery. No one ever says it that way. I feel like that's maybe the first time I've heard it framed that way, even though we're in the job of the work of trying to reduce stigma. So thanks for saying that. It's a really beautiful reframe.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of have to look at it that way, because if we don't, how are we ever going to move? It's like you're stuck in quicksand, and instead of trying to, because you have to be still in quicksand in order to strategically get out, but you don't want to be stuck there either, and there's so many things as it is internally, right? But there's so many things externally too that will try to keep you there, telling the wrong people, telling people who just don't understand or will only define you by your worst mistakes, right? People who won't give you a chance. And it's like, I'd rather be someone, if I was struggling with that, who was constantly in recovery, then think about it as I'm constantly in addiction. I'm never going to get out of this quicksand. Mm. So thank you for acknowledging that. It's really important to reframe. You can still be honest and transparent and reframe. It's, I think that's very important. How do we celebrate and promote recovery for the other 11 months of the year?
So I'm happy to talk about the work that Recover does. One of the things that we do is just try to also connect with our partners around the state. We try to serve statewide population.
Yeah.
Most of our staff are in Anchorage, though, and so we really rely on our community partners around the state. So we try to uplift any events that anyone is doing around the state. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we've tried different things. We've had, recovery party packs that people can request. Hey, do you want to throw a sober event in your community? Mm-hmm. We will give you what you need. We also have done, pre-pandemic, we did a storytelling event every year, and then the pandemic threw a wrench, as it did for most of us. And so this year we're getting back. It's going to be a virtual, and it's going to be a story circle, kind of a smaller group. We just really want to be able to uplift those stories, because not only is it really empowering for the storytellers themselves, but also for folks who hear those stories, it's a great kind of entree point to get people just thinking about it. Mm. Or maybe connecting with folks who you've known your whole life and don't even know they're in recovery. And then you hear this story and you have this whole other part of them that you're able to acknowledge and to celebrate and to love. And so another one of the ways I think about it is for all of the folks, I am a pretty privileged person. I'm a white woman. Not in the lowest socioeconomic status. I have a job. I have a home. I have a family. So it's a lot easier for me to say out loud that I'm in recovery. And that is not the same truth that everyone carries. Right. And it's not safe for some folks. It's, part of the thing when I think about celebrating National Recovery Month is to celebrate all of those unsung heroes, folks who maybe don't want to talk about their recovery, folks who aren't posting about their sobriety birthdays on social media, and to really think about them in ways that we can try to honor them without making them disclose.
Mm. Sometimes it's not safe to talk about your recovery.
The reason that we work to undo stigma and to reduce it is because there is a lot of stigma.
Yeah.
And Yeah, and that looks different for different people. And, you know, it just can change a person's entire perception. There's research out there that even folks who are working in, who are clinicians in substance use disorder treatment, if they hear the word substance abuse instead of substance use, then studies show that those outcomes are worse. Mm. They are more focused on penalties rather than supporting the person. They have worse outcomes. Like, stigma is very real, even in the language we use, even when we're trying to help. And so just needing to keep that at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. And so September went well for Recover Alaska?
I think so. I had a good time.
Right.
Every year we're trying to think of kind of new ways to celebrate. Mm-hmm. But we did have some new partnerships this year, so that felt really good.
Favorite moments?
You know, the David Dillon Foundation, Karen Malcolm Smith runs the David Dillon Foundation. She lost her son to opioid use disorder. Mm. And she is a remarkable person. And she is special and not unique, right? There are a lot of parents who have lost children who are doing great things for the community to try to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else's child.
Right.
And she has this memorial she's been doing. This is maybe the second or third year in Anchorage where she places crosses, and it's the whole community event, so she doesn't do it alone. Mm-hmm. But there are a bunch of crosses out to memorialize those we have lost to addiction. Mm-hmm. And this year, Recover partnered with her to try to help other communities be able to recreate that. We had some people actually reach out to say, hey, I want to do that in my community. How do I do it? And we say, here are the instructions, here are the tools. We can help you, you know, publicize it or whatever you want to do. And so it was really, it's a powerful visual to see those crosses on the park strip.
Yeah.
And people can come and write names of their loved ones on it, you know. And so it was, I'm glad to know that we're starting to get things like that further out there. And hopefully next year we can help talk about the 5 of those that happen around the state.
That's rad. Yeah. And you get to carry that encouragement and take it with you throughout the entire year for 365. Mm-hmm. So that's really rad. All right. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. We're speaking with Tiffany Hall and Dr. Vivian Gonzalez about recovery in Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams, and we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Dr. Vivian, the nature of your job is, you know, pretty direct, right? Do you find yourself getting the opportunity to kind of work with bigger organizations to kind of help, you know, maybe your participants, your clients, you know, receive particular services for recovery?
Well, some of the work that I've done is to develop interventions. Mm-hmm. So like an example of that would be we developed a smartphone app to get to more people. So not so much working with organizations, mm-hmm. but working in our treatment development and then developing specialized treatments for different groups.
Yeah.
So like one of the research projects I have right now is developing an intervention called Indigenous Recovery Planning.
Mm.
So it was an intervention developed for a specific Northern Tribes or Northern Plains tribal group. And we're doing a randomized control trial of that intervention. And we're teaching community members how to deliver the intervention because there's not enough practitioners.
Okay. Wow. What are the details of that app? Because that sounds really important.
So there is an app store version now called Step Away.
Step Away.
But this was the first one that was developed. It was an app that delivered a modification of relapse prevention for alcohol use disorder. It was specifically developed for alcohol use disorder, not just for, you know, moderating drinking or reducing drinking, but for folks with the disorder. And folks could lead themselves through that intervention. So it's kind of a do-it-yourself version of what you would get in a lot of different treatments.
Yeah.
And, you know, our aim there, when you look at alcohol use disorder, drug use disorders, only 10 to 15% of people who meet criteria for those disorders ever get treatment.
Wow.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the biggest barriers is attitudinal barriers, that I should be able to do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I shouldn't have this problem, the stigma around that, and not wanting to you know, not wanting to label themselves right. by getting treatment. So we need other options to be able to get the other 90, 85% mm-hmm. of people who don't want to go for treatment, as well as reduce the stigma and make treatment more available, easier to access, mm-hmm. so that it isn't such, such a burden or such a, you know, a stigmatizing event to get treatment.
I really like that you mentioned that. It almost feels like there's this, you know, this visual of like gold hidden under, like deep underground, you know, and you have an axe, a pickaxe, and you're just like digging and digging and digging. And all of that dirt and gravel is the stigma to get to the goal, which is the gold, you know. It's just, and it gets so tiring and so exhausting digging that sometimes you're halfway there and you can't obviously see your goal and you just want to give up. You go back to the surface and do whatever you're going to do. A lot of the time I feel like that stigma is the one thing that kind of prevents us from, you know, even seeing access to recovery. Why do you think, because both addiction and recovery have their own stigmas,
right?
Which is another thing that only in the past couple of years I've really come to discover, I've come to realize. But it's not as black and white as negative and positive, good and evil, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's all a big gray. Great people are in addiction. Great people are in recovery. And we need to continue to talk about that, like you said, so that people feel like they're not alone, so that they understand that there is access out there and that there is hope for them on the other side if recovery is a path that they choose to define for themselves and then embark on. But why do you think, and we've talked about this a little bit, but why do you think recovery has such a deep stigma to it?
Well, first I would say that these disorders have deep stigma to them. And that's part of the reason people don't recognize when they have mm-hmm. one of these disorders, is because when folks tend to think about addiction, you know, there's this idea of I know one when I see one. And people's prototype of what somebody with addiction is somebody who's like a public inebriate stumbling down the sidewalk in the middle of the day. Right. Or it's somebody who's, you know, addicted to cocaine and, you know, has sores on their face and, you know, that's all they do is seek out drugs. And that's the most extreme end of the extreme spectrum. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at something like alcohol use disorder, 1 in 3 people in their lives will experience an alcohol use disorder. It is incredibly, incredibly common. Mm-hmm. But if we have this idea of the most extreme, people aren't going to recognize it.
Right.
And, you know, even if their family members say, hey, man, you have a problem. I don't have a problem. Mm. I've got a job. I've got a car. I've got a family. And, of course, you can have all of those things and have a problem. So that it in itself is a major barrier. But I think that extreme definition, that not recognizing that this is much, much more common than it is, makes it that people do the stigma around it.
Yeah. And so in having and understanding that and understanding the direct and indirect nature of our jobs, even if we're seeking the same goal, approaching recovery can be a difficult thing in of itself. So how do we have those conversations? How do we, you know, go in the closet, get a table out in the middle of the floor and say, you guys are welcome here. Let's have a discussion. How do we open up those talks about stigma?
Boy, I think, you know, I think a show like this is something that opens up talks about stigma.
Yeah.
And again, that idea, like you had mentioned, you know, like people will say, I have a family member who's in recovery. Almost everyone has a family member who's in recovery. You might not recognize it. You might not define it as that.
Yeah.
But I mean, these are, again, incredibly, incredibly, you know, common disorders. So I think that's definitely part of it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add to that, Tiffany?
Yeah, and I'm going back a little bit, hearing you talk. You know, I remember when I was thinking about trying to get sober and would talk to one of my very dear friends who knows some of the harms that alcohol has put into my life. Mm. And I said, you know, I think I need to quit drinking. And she was like, no, you don't need to quit. Like, you just need to, like, moderate. And that's something for me I can't do. Like, I am not a person who can moderate my alcohol intake. If I have one, I don't know if I'm only going to have one or have a million.
Right.
So for me, it is an all or nothing kind of game. That's how I feel. That's where my only success has been. But then also, you know, like, as I talk to other people, everyone was so worried for me to quit because they, like, didn't want me to miss out on that. Or maybe they didn't want me to be labeled as that, but it really felt like my life was going to be worse without alcohol in it. And it's just the complete opposite of the truth. I mean, not only because I'm not experiencing those same harms anymore, but also, like, I can do everything anyone else can do in terms of alcohol. Like, so for me, part of the thing about stigma also is if you're hosting a party, make sure to have non-alcoholic options and don't, like, just assume people want alcohol or tap water. And don't offer them multiple times. Don't be a pusher. Don't say, oh, you're not driving, you can have another. If somebody says no thank you after their first one, respect that and say, great, what else can I give you? Maybe when you're offering drinks, start with a non-alcoholic version instead of a, you know, there are just a lot of assumptions made about alcohol. I didn't realize the stat that 1 in 3 people will have an alcohol use disorder in their lifetime. But about 30% of adults don't drink alcohol. So it's a really big assumption to always imagine that that's going to be what brings people to a party. And that if you have alcohol there, you better not invite anyone in recovery because they don't want to be there. That's not true. Right. I am a life of the party. Like, I want to be there. You know, so those are just some of the things that came up for me when I was listening to
it. Well, and Tiffany, that's such a common thing, too, for people to try to convince someone who, and particularly someone who's, you know, quitting drinking on their own, they're not going to treatment, who says, yeah, I have a problem with alcohol, I'm going to stop drinking. And people encourage them to drink. It is, you know, almost bizarre to me. I have a brother who had an alcohol use disorder, and he started dating someone new, and they eventually got married. And his husband was encouraging him to drink and kind of did it in front of me. And I was just really shocked at that attitude. They said, oh, you know, he's not drinking, but we'll loosen him up. And I was thinking, man, do you know what you're getting into here? And he loosened him up. He went back to drinking and they got divorced. That person really just didn't have an understanding of the nature of the problem. And then that, too, again, that idea of stigma that, oh, you don't really have a drinking problem. You know, like, you don't. And because they've got this prototype of what that person is, and you're not that person. And unfortunately, that can really undo recovery, to have people encouraging the person. You know, part of encouraging recovery, supporting recovery, is supporting recovery. If somebody is making a healthy life choice for themselves, please, please support them in that. There is, you know, you can live a long, healthy, happy life and perhaps happier not drinking. So there's no reason to encourage others to drink. And then, too, to be aware, you know, if you are encouraging somebody else to drink, I'm going to go back to that 1 in 3 stat, be careful. Because it's possible that you're encouraging somebody in recovery to drink, and that can, you know, that can tip somebody over. So, yeah, folks just need to respect that non-drinking is a thing. 30% of, you know, adults don't drink, and to not make it that alcohol has to be the center of, you know, every interaction, every gathering, every celebration.
You know, first of all, just the idea that alcohol is a positive societal magnet, that if I bring it, I will be, you know, I'll be the hero here. You know, I'll be a great host. Not always true, you know. So it's like little things like that that could really change the trajectory of someone's entire life. I mean, we don't always have to think like to that extreme, but at just the core basis, like we've been talking about, of like respect and consideration and mindfulness. Or if you do know someone's in recovery, making the active decision to support them, to be empathetic to what they need, right? Asking them maybe what they need instead of assuming, because that could be harmful to anyone, regardless of wherever they are on their own path. So I think that's a really good place to start. You know, Alaska is a very unique place. We do have our own statistics when it comes to alcoholism. They're pretty high. And as October starts, we're seeing snow in the mountains. We're seeing the sun not play around during the day as much. And it's pretty dark, and it's going to get darker. So do we think that that has an effect on our alcoholism rates? Is that something that,
Yeah, there's research on this. And I'm going to start by saying it's not a strong effect. It is definitely not a strong effect, but there have been studies done, and alcohol use peaks in December, January, and July. So it's not just when it's dark. I've done some research on this. It was a very small effect. But we found when there was the most daylight and the least daylight,
right,
that was when there was the most drinking. Now, why that is, you know, we didn't find, again, it was a pretty small effect. Part of what's going on in December and January, that seasonal effect, is potentially holidays as well. So it's not just about it being dark and gloomy outside. It's about holidays. So, right, Thanksgiving, you see the same thing with like weight gain and various other things.
Right,
there's
various
unhealthy things that happen at the same time that we're celebrating and having a good time.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of holidays in that time period. In July, when the sun is, there's the most amount of sun, part of what's going on there too is temperature, that people will drink more when it's hot.
Right.
So it's it's both. It's when it's a lot of sun and when there's not very much sun.
Okay. That's very, very interesting. And I kind of do have like this very summary idea of just like a guy, you know, enjoying, you know, a hot dog and a beer, you know, in a very social setting, you know, in a very positive setting with his family and stuff like that. And so that's a positive picture. It's a positive portrayal, you know, or at least supposed to be a very American thing. So I can kind of see how like a lot of us really look forward to that after getting out of all the cold and all the dark and out of the transition of spring, like because we just don't have a whole lot of summer here. So that's very interesting. I always knew in my heart that like, man, some winter, the darkness, when the cold, maybe not big, but an effect that we can feel, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and even as you're talking about it, when you were talking about the dark, like it's this very kind of depressing tone. I could tell that you don't like winter very much. Is the sense that I'm getting?
I'm trying to prepare for it. You know, I'm like I tell people that I'm like a plant. You give me water and sunlight, and I'm good. You know, I don't need anything else but those two things. So it's just like, oh, great. Being born and raised here, you know, I've been here for 30 years. I still have to prepare, right? Now,
mentally,
winter comes, you give me some hot chocolate and a snowboard, I'll be good all winter long.
And you just hit on something really good there, which is turning a negative into a positive.
Yeah.
You know, so if you get outside and find some things you like to do that are outside in the winter, it changes your perspective. Yeah. But I think one of the things that you're hitting on with the dark and the getting, you know, the deep voice and slower speaking is, you know, I think what you're hitting on potentially is more of like winter blues and people using alcohol and drugs to deal with those winter blues.
Right.
And so that's kind of its own issue in terms of needing to treat that underlying problem, is that if you do find yourself getting more depressed in the winter and you do find yourself, you know, using alcohol, using drugs to cope with that depression.
Right.
I mean, there's different motives that people have for drinking and drug use. Drinking to cope with depression, with anxiety, is one of the big factors, risk factors for actually developing a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good reason
right.
to drink and use drugs. Like you said, sitting around having a hot dog, you know, in summer at a picnic is, you know, a good reason to have a drink. But that folks need to be aware, particularly know themselves, that if you know that you start to get depressed in the winter and you know that you start drinking more, pay attention to see if you start drinking more. See if you're using that as your way of boosting your mood. And if you are, you need to find something else.
I like that.
That's a dark road to go down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And kind of just going off of that, I heard you say, you know, Alaska has high rates of addiction. I know that we have very high rates of the harms related to and or caused by alcohol compared to other states. And we also have a lot of resilience up here.
Absolutely.
I almost dislike that term because I don't want to like put it on the individual, but we have some community resilience here and we take care of each other here in a different way than other places. So I also just want to highlight some of our strengths and to kind of go along with this idea of winter blues. And if that's you or if that's your friends or family and you know you have people like that in your life, like reach out. A lot of times we talk about the opposite of addiction being community rather than sobriety. And so I think, again, it's kind of about knowing yourself and knowing people who are close to you and trying to make sure that we continue to really take care of each other and look out for each other.
Absolutely. And what would you say for the individuals maybe listening that like don't have that immediate those community members or, you know, family and friends to be able to support them? Like, where can they look toward?
That's a great question. I think it depends on kind of what they're seeking. If it's sort of that more general community, you know, Alaskans use Facebook in a big way here.
Yes, we do.
Like, you can find events of like other kind of like-minded things or activities. If it is really about alcohol use and people are looking for a support group, you know, AA is probably the most common one, the most well-known one. But there are some other support groups that happen that are not AA, that are in person or online or on the phone. We try to include as many of those resources as we can at recoveralaska.org. Mm-hmm. We're always trying to add to that list. There also are apps like the Step Away app. In fact, I love how small Alaska is. Recover Alaska offers that app free of charge to folks. And I didn't even know that you helped develop it.
Yep.
So thank you. Because we don't want there to be a barrier to access something as powerful as that.
Yeah.
So I would say just trying to, you know, reach out and tell people what you're interested in. And people have a way of, you know, connecting folks.
That's one thing that I have noticed up here specifically. Like, we love social media and we use it very, very well. Even just to inspire someone else who's really struggling with like the dark to just like take a beautiful picture. Look at how it's a perspective thing. Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's just so nice to be able to find that encouragement and support with social media. It's pretty rad. And so speaking of access and resources, what other resources can you guys think of for anyone who's looking to start their recovery journey?
I think you hit on some really good ones. You know, there are folks who, you know, try to, you know, oftentimes it's a first step. People try to manage it on their own. And a lot of people are able to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're not able to do that, seeking out other ways. Mm-hmm. And so it can be through mutual self-help like AA, NA. There are alternatives, like you mentioned, and I bet you have those alternatives on your website.
Mm-hmm.
But Smart Recovery is an alternative.
Okay.
Online meetings and in-person meetings. And then there's also, too, for folks who are still maybe just recognizing or starting to realize that they might have a substance use problem, might have an alcohol problem,
mm-hmm.
there are resources as well.
Yeah.
So there is a website that's maintained, created by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism that's called Rethinking Drinking. And it helps you do a checkup on yourself to see whether or not you're drinking too much and gives you safe drinking levels and ways to cut back your drinking. There's also checkupsandchoices.com.
Okay.
And that has a program. It's not free. It's very low cost compared to traditional treatment. But that has something called the Drinker's Checkup
mm-hmm.
that has you go through a series of questions and it gives you feedback on your drinking and links you up with potential sources of treatment. There is a group called Moderation Management, mm-hmm. moderationmanagement.org, that helps folks who are choosing a goal not of abstinence but of moderating their drinking. So it has techniques okay. for helping people to cut back their drinking. So there's actually quite a bit
wow.
out there.
That's pretty amazing. Those are resources that I, you know, half of which I've never even heard of. And so not only did you just enlighten our audience to people who might need those, but to me personally as well.
Yeah, same.
So,
I'm over
you.
Here taking notes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. I know we have Rethinking Drinking on our site, but I don't know about the other ones. So we'll try to post them on there. And just to also highlight that a lot of the things that I have mentioned so far today are pretty common in Western culture, Alaska Native culture that works for some folks, but not for other folks. And so connecting back to culture is a really
yes.
strong preventive or protective factor. And so we try to work with places like 211, for example, is a statewide social services resource hotline. Anyone can dial 211. And so we work with them to try to make sure they have a very expansive list of services to include a lot of types of treatment that might be kind of outside of the traditional Western model.
That was Justin Williams speaking with Tiffany Hall, Executive Director of Recover Alaska, and Dr. Vivian Gonzalez, Professor of Psychology at UAA, about staying active in substance abuse recovery. I'm producer Ammon Swenson. Up next, I dug through our archives and found this next piece. It's from a Recover Alaska storytelling event from 2018 called Second Chances, Stories of Hope, Addiction, and Recovery in Alaska. And just a heads up, this story does discuss some serious topics like suicide.
Dad has collapsed at the hotel and is not responding to the paramedics. That phone call started my final spiral down into addiction. My first phone call was to my best friend. My second phone call was to my coke dealer. seeing if you can spot me a gram till tomorrow, like it was always, every phone call to him. I was very selfish in everything I did. My first thought was to drown the feelings I was feeling. I was crying and wailing, and just couldn't do anything to, I would do anything to make the pain go away. Without thought to other people, without thought to my family, to my wife, to my daughter. Everything I ever did was just to get that next fix. Followed was 8 months of straight hell for everyone I knew, for myself especially. September of 2016, I was at my wit's end. I'd thrown away my marriage, thrown away multiple jobs. Almost every job I've ever had, I got fired because of my addictions. I was at my wit's end, on the verge of a breakdown. And that morning, I was planning on how I could kill myself without hurting very many other people. Ready to take a drive on the wrong way on the highway. I was 5 minutes from heading out when I was putting my truck into drive when I got a text out of nowhere from my sister that we barely ever spoke and just said, "Are you okay?" And I literally broke down. I started crying, basically screaming, wailing. And I called her and said, "No, I'm not okay." So I went, she helped me out and got me over to Providence. I spent a week at Providence Mental Health Unit where I was introduced to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I didn't know at that time, but that was gonna save my life. Shortly after that, I went down to treatment down in Washington and began my journey there to actually my journey in recovery. While I was there, my daughter ran away. And I finally felt the powerlessness of my life. I could not control what I was doing. I couldn't control anything. She ran away, I couldn't do anything about it. I literally lost my I was crying, screaming again, and scaring all the other inmates, as we called ourselves. But then one of the associate counselors came out and asked me if I'd tried praying about it. And I was raised Mormon, so I'd rebelled a long time ago against that. And I didn't really know how to pray anymore. I decided to give it a shot. I went in and got on my knees and started praying and instantly felt relief. I felt a weight lifted off my shoulders. Immediately after that, they offered a meditation session and I went into there, and even more so, that was a miracle to me, that something just in my own brain could actually help me out without having to drown it or covered up with drugs. Since that day, I start every day and end every day with prayer and meditation. I don't know how it works. I don't know why it works. All I know is that it works. That's what works for me. I celebrated 2 years last week, and that's something I never thought I would have made. And I know I've hurt my ex-wife, and I still love her. She's still my best friend today. But I have a lot to do before I can get back to her. My daughter and I have a better relationship now than we ever had before. I can be open and honest with her, and hopefully she'll learn from my example not to go down the path I went down. Everything's not all roses. There's still hard days. My brain's still stupid, but I'm getting a lot better at it. I have hope. I never had hope before. I would do anything I could just to make people hear what I thought they wanted to hear. But that, yeah, it was just a show for myself. I'm sure nobody ever bought it. But I know today that with the tools I've learned through Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, from the treatment center, the tools I have today will help me get through this. I can do this without drugs and alcohol. I've been doing it without drugs and alcohol. All it took was asking for help. Help, it's hard to do, but that's what worked for me. So if you are struggling, I hope you find the help that you need, and that just know that you can do this. If I can do this, I know you can. So thank you very much.
Coming up next, State of Art.
Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art on Hometown Alaska, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear all about Cyrano's current production titled With. It stars Gigi Lynch and Charlie Cardwell as an elderly couple nearing the end of their lives. The play is directed by Teresa K. Pond and was written by Carter Lewis. It runs Thursday through Sunday and wraps up on October 23rd. Today I'm joined by Gigi Lynch and Teresa K. Pond to discuss the play. Here's Pond to break it down.
This play is the story of a couple, 60-year plus marriage, and they are reaching the end of the road, as they say, and grappling with how to have control over how they finish this beautiful life that they have been in with all of its joy and pain, and like we all do when we get here. It's a story about two people who are finding each other again, just in the nick of time, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like, you know, it kind of runs the gamut of, you know, humorous, heartwarming, tragic a little bit. I heard an interview with the playwright Carter Lewis recently. This was from a couple of years ago, I believe, when the play first premiered. But He said the play is very funny until it's not. Can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
I'm just really proud that he said that. I'd forgotten that. That is exactly right. It is very funny until it's not. When I was a directing student in graduate school, I studied a French theorist called Henri Bergson, who wrote about comedy. And the core point was that comedy is always laughing at our pain. Whether we are watching someone slip on a banana peel and we're really glad that wasn't us, up to much more sophisticated pain, as does appear in life and at the end of life between these two people, we recognize something and we need to laugh. We need to laugh at our pain. Now, the pain is also, there's mild pain like marriage. We've had a couple of audience members say, "That's my marriage on stage." I heard that. Some people on opening night. So there's all levels of what that may mean. But Mr. Lewis is correct. He wrote a story that is very funny until it's not. And even when we hit those more poignant times, I think we still find a smile at recognition, whether it's our lives or our parents or relatives that we have witnessed and been present for. I think there's love throughout. And I suppose that is also the core thing I would say, is that this play is about love, about the love you have and rediscovering the love that you may have lost sight of.
Yeah, so it sounds like it deals with, you know, some real and potentially tough subjects, but in a heartfelt, maybe even like comforting way.
Absolutely. We're looking at life in all of its forms. And so heartfelt comfort is critical to how we can, you know, journey through some of the harder parts of our lives. I think Carter Lewis does a beautiful job of creating the story here for us to do that. And the laughter moments are really funny. People are going to really enjoy that.
Uh-huh. Well, Gigi, now you are one of the leads, and it's kind of a small cast, it sounds like, kind of an intimate show. What has the experience been like for you so far?
Absolutely wonderful. Just to go back a little bit, I think the rehearsal process was probably even more in depth and intense than it normally is with a larger cast. We were very lucky that, like Teresa said, she and Charlie and I are dear friends. So it was just a joy to be able to do this together. But to have the time to really just delve into the characters, mine the script for every little jewel that's in there, we're still discovering it. That's what's really cool, is that with every performance, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that this line was funny, because the audience will laugh and will think, oh, I didn't expect that one, you know? So yeah, the whole process has just been wonderful. Teresa is an amazing director, as I'm sure you know, and I've had the pleasure of working with her on several productions, and it's just, with every production, it just seems to get better and better. So she keeps resetting the bar. I don't know how she does that. But.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously you've gotten to work very closely with Teresa and your co-star. Could you maybe talk about your co-star a little bit, since they're not here today?
Oh, Charlie is wonderful. He's played my husband two other times. So we go back a little bit, and he's also a dear friend. He is the consummate actor. He has this ability to hold the audience in the palm of his hand in a way I have rarely seen. And I know that audience members who have seen him before in other roles will certainly remember some of the extraordinary performances he's given. And this one is no exception. He embodies Clifford Haberdine in physically, emotionally, just to perfection in my estimation. And he's just a joy to play with.
Did you find maybe your previous relationship of acting together on stage as husband and wife in previous stuff, did that maybe set kind of a nice foundation for you to pick up on this next batch of characters?
Definitely, definitely. And also, I think he brought some of his marriage into it, and I brought some of my marriage into it. My husband came on Sunday. And, you know, he's been hearing me rehearse this now for the last couple of months. And he said, I kind of recognized us up there. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe could you, yeah, maybe can we talk about that a little bit? I mean, you don't have to go into the grisly details or anything, but, you know, I mean, what kinds of personal perspectives maybe or experiences did we bring to, you know, either the acting or the directing?
Well, I will say that in the early rehearsals, I recognized my parents in this. I'm, you know, middle age, I suppose. I'm not quite at the same place where Gigi and Charlie have arrived, but I kept looking at like, oh, that's so like my dad, or that's so like my mom. And then I felt like I was really learning from them with the experience of a long marriage. I got married this summer, actually. Mm. So I'm a newly married person.
Congrats.
So I thank you. So I was taking notes.
Yeah, taking totally. Notes.
But I did see that. And I, you know, you always wonder as a director why you choose a project. And as we started rehearsals, I suddenly thought, I think part of the reason that I chose this, you know, personally, was maybe to explore and honor my own parents and their long, beautiful marriage.
Yeah.
So Gigi has thoughts for herself on that.
Well, no, kind of the same. I saw definitely, you know, parts of my parents in this, parts of my grandparents in this,
yeah.
And definitely in other relationships. So I think that's what we do as actors. You know, we bring in, even if we're not like the character, because as Teresa will probably tell you, I'm nothing like Minnie. but that doesn't mean that I can't find parts of my life to be kind of in sync with what she's going through, if that makes sense. I can still find, you know, things that I've been through that have been very, very similar to what she's going through. So
that makes me wonder, you know, as an actor, you've probably, I mean, obviously you've had to reckon with all sorts of different character traits, their personal conflicts and stuff like that. But what's it like maybe dealing with the subject of, you know, age and maybe the inevitability of death, like where it's not necessarily some, you know, monster or bad guy is at the center of the conflict?
Well, I will tell you, since I can't see you, I'm suspecting that you are quite young, but because I'm not anymore, and I've reached that, you know, I don't know if I want to say final chapter, but one of the last chapters of my life, that this year has probably hit me the hardest. It's all of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm old. And it's been a little bit of a revelation. So it's been kind of interesting, and also, you know, experiencing, going through right now, this part of my life, I think, is both sad and joyous. Joy that I'm still here. Sad that I see so many dear friends and family members experiencing either illness or loss of life. And it's sad to say, not a week has gone by this past year that I have not heard from someone that, you know, something tragic has happened. And it's like, mm-hmm. Wow, I guess that's what this part of life is all about. And so that's what Minnie and Clifford are dealing with. You know, they're alone and they're having to come to terms with this both individually and together. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the together that is where the, you know, the butting of heads and the, you know, he wants to do it one way, she wants to do it another, but they want to do it together. And it's like life, you know, yeah. You want to end it on your own terms, but at the same time, facing that is not an easy task. So
Yeah, I mean, do you find that maybe embodying this character and, you know, kind of facing some of the things that she's dealing with, but also, you know, inevitably this could be a reflection on your own life. Is there, you know, some kind of maybe catharsis in, you know, pretending to go through what she's going through?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I've had some recent loss in our family, and this whole process has been very cathartic. So,
yeah. At this point, you know, we've got, you've talked about how the play has kind of continued to evolve as time has gone on, and you've been picking up on different aspects. Is there anything maybe specific that you could maybe talk about that, you know, as an actor, you maybe didn't notice when you started rehearsing to, you know, once you've kind of gotten your feet under you a little bit?
I mean, there's a lot I could talk about there. I think the one thing that strikes me the most now, and it always does after performances start, is how every single audience brings us discoveries that we did not expect. Because they laugh in places that I had no idea they were going to laugh. We've had one of the best moments, which I will not tell. You're just going to have to come see it. But one of the best moments is and there's probably two of them at least, that the audience goes, "Oh no." They talk out loud when they see something happen.
They go, no, don't.
No, don't do that. And then there's another couple of, there's one very big surprise at the end, which nobody expects. And so you can hear the audience kind of like, they're laughing in the midst of the pain that is going on. And it's like, they're not quite sure whether they should be laughing or not, but then all of a sudden it just bubbles out. Like they just can't help themselves. And so, which is what life is, you know, in the midst of pain, you find joy, and that's what it's all about. So this play is a perfect reflection of all of our lives. And if not what's happening right now, but what will happen. So.
That was my conversation with actor Gigi Lynch and director Teresa K. Pond. We were discussing the current Cyrano's theater production titled With. The play runs Thursday through Sunday with the final performance on October 23rd. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. Our guests today were Tiffany Hall, Executive Director of Recover Alaska, and Dr. Vivian Gonzalez, Professor of Psychology at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Ammon Swenson is our producer. Thanks so much for tuning in again, and we'll see you next time.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.